Well, welcome to Friday to the 13th Open Line. So get ready to make the calls, and we'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, 3 months ago, on another Friday the 13th, tragedy, of course, Art Bell passed away in April. It's still truly very strange to accept that. We called again today the coroner's office in Nye County in Nevada. And they still do not have the toxicology results in order to come up with some kind of cause of death. It's been 3 months, and they keep telling us that they don't know when they are going to get the results. We'll keep trying. We'll keep trying. In the meantime, I've been getting all kinds of speculative emails. Don't. Do not speculate on this or his cause of death because we just really don't know. He had COPD, but you can't speculate on, and I'm not going to get into it, but there are all kinds of wild possibilities that I've been getting in these emails. Don't speculate. Let's wait and find out if we get the results. And I say if because I'm not sure they're going to publicize it or release it. We've been calling, and our colleagues have been calling, and people very close to Nye County have been calling, and we'll just see what happens. But some of you have been asking for updates on that, and that's what it is so far. Let's take your open line calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back to those Friday night, Friday the 13th as well, open lines for you as we have quite a week, don't we? Quite a week. We're going to be in Denver tomorrow shooting another series of episodes for Gaia for Beyond Belief. Looking forward to that, too. Let's go to our buddy Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana, to get things started. Well, hello there, stranger.
Yeah, George, this is your God, guns, and gold, man, your Bible, bullets, and beans, man. Telling everybody to get ready there, George.
For my army. Are you going to be in Asheville?
No, I won't make it with Barry and you. You know, I'm stuck down here in the swamps of Alexandria, Louisiana. So I the only other place I can meet y'all is in New Orleans, like I did for that Oswald conference and stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely. How have you been? Where have you been?
Well, George.
Uh-oh. What's this?
You can tell. I've kind of, you know, I ran this campaign and stuff, and I lost. Now they said I violated, and this Friday the 13th, they said I violated some kind of campaign finance thing. So I got to work through that now, George. So
what did they say you violated?
I don't know, George. Exactly. So I turned in everything, you know, and they give you a sheet telling you what you can't take off for campaign, like clothes. You can't buy clothes with your campaign finance money, but gas, copies, posters, you know, signs and stuff like that. You can use that.
What'd you do? Go out and buy a tuxedo?
No. No, but like I said, I'm flabbergasted, but I don't think they wanted me in the race anyway.
I think you're being railroaded. You really are.
Yeah. Hey, but what I wanted to bring up, and I was telling Tommy, this struck guy for the FBI, because, you know, I've had trouble with the FBI. And if President Trump isn't careful, the FBI is going to set him up in something, too. And this drug guy, I don't know if you saw the nine-hour thing he was on live on C-SPAN, but it was ridiculous. And the Democrats, that guy going to say he deserved a Purple Heart. You know I was a military police officer. And the guy going to say, oh, he deserves a Purple Heart for doing all this. I said, I couldn't believe it. I'm not a lot of military and vets and stuff like that. I know they're upset, and it's just unbelievable. But you know what I want, George, if you could get all your listeners and callers, whitehouse.gov. I need my pardon there, George.
I know. Before we do that and do it right, we need your file.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll send it to
I got to be able to say what you did, what you were, you know, accused and convicted of. I need all that.
Okay. That's no problem.
Okay.
I'll send it to Tommy and you.
Okay. All right, good luck, Cornelius. We'll try to do whatever we can. Hey, stranger things have happened. Let's go to Shane in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Shane.
Cool. Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks. I was just traveling, and I was up driving up to the Northeast. And the same thing happens when I go west, anywhere outside of the cities. The size of the human body gets too... I mean, it just doesn't seem human to me anymore. Everybody's a bit swollen for sure, and eating mindlessly, you know, just products on the shelf. And my question is, I wonder why people don't realize that it's not normal to have a list of diseases or chronic ailments, and why they think it's normal to be, you know, relatively overweight. Have you ever considered this?
Well, that, you know, that's historical. It's not just recent. I mean, there's a certain group, there's a camp of people. I'm sure some of you that are listening right now would consider yourself overweight. One of the reasons why we do so many health-related programs is to make sure that some of you take care of yourself. And if we can reach one person or a handful of people, I feel good about that, and we'll continue to do that. But this is not anything new. You're not looking at some phenomena. You know, this has been, you know, if you have 10 people, I would say 4 may be overweight. That may be low. Texts and tweets, what do we have, Tom?
This one's from Brady in Utah. His name's Brady. Can you talk a little bit about the conspiracy theory that we never went to the moon? I didn't know about it until my brother told me.
Well, I don't, first of all, believe that conspiracy theory at all. I am very well at the stage where I say we went to the moon, we risked a lot of lives, we had a lot of... American men and women devoted their careers to us getting to the moon. We went to the moon. Now, were there some strange things on the moon? Like, you know, how did we get through the Van Allen belt? You know, the flag looks like it's waved. A lot of these have already been explained. But
right.
But we went to the moon.
Of course.
Pure and simple.
There you go, Brady.
All right. Thanks, Tommy. Let's go next to... Tom in the Bronx, welcome to the program. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. I hope
you
are,
too.
I'd
like to say this, that all the college kids that owe all this money to their bills, I would like to see a special lotto set up to address that problem, and the money generated from the lotto would go to pay the kids' bills.
They pay it all off, too. Or why don't they just cancel them?
Well, I understand.
Or can you do that?
In other words, until you can get that going, I think it would be good to try to address it some way.
I got an email from somebody who did not go to college. And let me tell you basically what his email was, and you tell me what you think, Tom. He said, I have heard the argument, pro and con, on Coast to Coast and other programs about student loans and how they're suffocating kids and everything else. He said, I did not go to college. I don't have any student loans. I wanted to go to college, but I couldn't afford the debt. And so I did not accumulate it and go. Why do people think that other people who went to college, who accumulated the debt on their own, nobody forced them to go to school, why should we have to bail them out for their decisions? Nobody told them they had to go to college. They went on their own. They accumulated the loans and the debts, primarily because they couldn't afford anything else, but they did it. Why do we have to save them? So how do we answer that, Tom?
Well, that's true. I would say that's very true. But the fact of the matter is they're stuck with all these bills. And the fact of the matter is that there must be a way to help bail them out. Maybe this is
when you go out and charge excess amount on your credit card, that's your fault, right?
That's true.
You did that. So should somebody come along and bail you out because you did that?
Well, I understand that, too, but I'm just trying to deal with the reality of their misery, that's all.
Yeah, but who put them in that misery?
Well, first of all, society has been pushing the kids to go to school, right? Parents do. They say, oh, you have to go to school for your future and all that. And then they do it, and it's the bills that they've been adding up, obviously, are too many bills. In other words, they could have less bills.
Well, there's no question that the price of tuition is too high.
That's true.
I mean, that's high, and that's what strangled these kids when they get the loans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I understand that. But here's the issue is, if we're going to run a society and we need people who are educated, you want them to go to college, make it cheap and affordable for people.
Well, they made an industry out of it, obviously.
They did.
Industry, a vicious industry has been made out of everything.
But do you believe at this point the student loan debt, Gordon from Lakeland, Florida, is probably going to call if he's listening. The student loan debt is the responsibility of the person who went out and borrowed it.
Well, I understand that, too. But in other words, look, until we can get a better operation going, I think that putting a lotto up would be the way to go.
To help them out.
To help them out. I mean, you have to help out the people that are needed so badly.
Well, what about homeless people? What are we going to do for them?
Well, can I tell you about that just for a moment?
Sure.
Years ago, in New York City, my parents were getting up in years, and we were living in a building that started the welfare department, put it bluntly, was going into competition with the renter, and they were putting people in the building that were very, very bad, very bad people. We had drug addicts that moved next to us. The police were there every third day. That's how bad that was getting. And I joined a community association, and I put out an advertisement in the local newspapers called "How to Save an Endangered Species: The Taxpaying Citizen." And in there, this was a time of Mayor Koch. I don't know whether you know who Mayor
Koch. Oh, yeah, sure. New York.
Yeah, so I put out this advertisement when I joined the community association. And I said, let's have welfare-free zones. Well, of course, that caused a stir. There was a newspaper that refused to take my ad. They sent it back, and my name's Bartolotta, and my last name, and after the VAR, Bart, they put BAS in there. You can figure that out.
Yeah. Right.
And anyway, I had newspapers that were strike newspapers. There was a strike on, newspaper strike at the time, so strike papers picked up my ad. Anyway, thousands of people answered the ad. Now,
really?
Thousands of people were sending the ad. I asked them to take the ad out of the newspaper and then send it to City Hall or send it to the Bronx Borough President's office because I live in the Bronx. And the ads were going in there. The Bronx Borough President freaked out and told my association, cease and desist, or we're taking you to court over the ad. But I put the ad out. They didn't. But they went with the ad. And there's thousands of people that joined the association after that. But anyway, what it culminated in was that naturally there was no such thing as a welfare-free zone. But what they did was they turned around and they opened up shelters galore.
Well, that's a good thing.
Huh?
That's a good thing.
Yeah, well, that was, well, it took a lot of individuals that had no direction in life, and they were putting them all together, which they bellyached about. A lot of individuals to this day, there's about 60,000 people in New York City living in shelters. Some,
And if you didn't have shelters, they'd be on the streets.
If you don't have shelters, they'd be on the streets.
That's a big problem.
It's a better situation. So we were dealing with it. Meantime, the apartments that were free were open to people looking for rooms, families looking for rooms, which some it helped out a lot.
Well, we need to be doing that for a lot of people right now, because I think the homeless thing is despicable in this country with that much wealth, why we can't take care of people who aren't as fortunate as some of us. Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Joe.
Hi, George. I just want to comment on Billy's section, the previous section.
The Exorcist.
Yeah, I've read a number of books on that topic, and I notice they always go to Elijah, where he was getting chased in the desert, and he's looking for something spectacular to happen, a whirlwind or a storm or a hurricane, as he's getting chased in terms of help, and then that doesn't show up, and he gets a still small voice. And these books always say, well, we should look for a still small voice. But I would say Elijah was looking for the spectacular, and sometimes spectacular events do happen right in front of an individual. And you have to say, what is the reason for that, and interpret it as, why is this coming spectacular thing happening right in front of me? And I think the reason could be it's for an impression, to make a more lasting impression on why you should head in this direction. The spectacular, you know, maybe it's like a sky show or some of that nature that's kind of pointing you in a certain direction. So I think that does happen to people where they get like a spectacular sign, and there's a reason why it's spectacular. So another thing with that also is, you know, I have some friends that, you know, are like one friend that's like a seer, a woman, and she always advises whatever particular problem you have, say you're in a traffic jam, pray for yourself, but also everybody else with the same problem.
Sure.
For everybody caught in the traffic
jam.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know.
Well, it's the collective consciousness that you have to do. And don't forget, we have that prayer club on Fridays. This is this list that is unpublished, where people write in and say, put so-and-so on the prayer list. And a lot of people are spending a lot of time praying, even though it just takes one person, one strong person, to be able to do this. We're getting lots, and we're getting some amazing results, too. I mean, absolutely amazing results. Couple little business quick matters, and we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back with more Friday the 13 open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. I hope you're all signed up for the free Coast Zone newsletter. It's available at our website, coasttocoastam.com. Like us on Facebook. I want to get as many likes as we can get. And follow us on Twitter as well. We send out little messages and tidbits all the time. And those of you who are eligible, go to paranormaldate.com and sign up for that as well. So I'll be back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM as we continue with open lines this Friday the 13th, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment here of open lines. Let's go right now west of the Rockies. Ivan's with us in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Ivan.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good. I hope you are, too.
I am now. I was kind of laughing here. I was sitting in my garage. I've been working here most of the night. I slept a couple hours today. Got a lot of stuff to get done. But anyhow, it was a thing of beyond belief. There's a lot of people out there will probably think it is beyond belief. This actually happened to me.
Okay.
I'm 78 years old. I'll be 79 on September 7th.
Good for you. You don't sound it, man. You sound like you're 50-something.
I know everybody says that, but at times I feel like that, and at times I feel like I'm 10 years older than I actually am. But anyhow, I wanted to tell you something that happened to me, and I'm still trying to find out why the creator made me make a sharp U-turn or left turn or whatever you want to call it. But August 5th, we sold a home in Seattle because Seattle's getting really crazy. It's just our taxes were going to go up possibly to over $100,000 a year because we lived on Lake Washington. And
$100,000 a year for the taxes?
Yeah. There's a lot of people that pay that.
Wow.
And they're willing to just to live on Lake Washington. In fact, you tell people that you live on Lake Washington, I go, God, I paid so much taxes. And they go, well, you deserve it. You live on the lake. And, you know, this is a house that was inherited by my wife's family. Actually,
okay.
I didn't want to live there. I wanted to live on the home we originally had, but the kids love the water. Here we are. But anyway, the long story told, we sold the house, and we moved to a little place called Fall City. It's a great place. It's the best you can imagine. There's deer and elk and bear running around, and it's God's country, what I call God's country. People are nice and what have you. So anyway, August 5th, I took my landlord. Now, I haven't had a landlord since I was 23, and I took my landlord to the boat races, the hydro races, seat fair is what they call it. And I got back, and I'm talking to my wife here at this new house. We leased a new home up on the side of a mountain overlooking the Snoqualmie River. It's beautiful, and we feel blessed to be here, except I'm paying monthly rent. I haven't done that in a long time. But anyway, I was sitting there talking to my older daughter, Sherry, and my wife, Cheryl, and we're standing at the hood of the car, and all of a sudden I had a vacuum in my hand. I dropped it, and apparently I didn't reach over and pick it up. I remember my wife saying, you're acting kind of funny. And they always say stuff anyway, so I just thought, I'm getting away from here. So I turned around, I went to the left, and I started walking away. And then all of a sudden, I got that feeling that you can probably remember the first time you ever had, and that's when you were going to vomit, and you felt that water in your throat. And I said, and I actually said to myself, maybe I am. And then pretty soon, wham, I lost.
You got sick.
Yeah, I was getting sick, and I lost all the blood from my head to my feet. And then I stopped, and I turned around, and I started walking back, and I said to myself, maybe I am. Maybe something is going on. I walked over, and I was walking over to my wife, and the next thing I know, I'm standing at the hood of the car, and I said, she said, you want me to call 911? I said, no. And I said, yeah, call 911.
You felt that bad?
Oh, I felt like I've never had in 78 plus years.
Right.
I've never felt that bad. Did you think,
Ivan, you were dying?
Not at the time. No, I just knew that something wasn't right. I really didn't think I was dying. And then all of a sudden, my wife said, you want me to call 911? And I said, no. And then I said, and then all of a sudden it was like somebody hit me in the back of the head and said, oh, yes. And I said, yeah, do it, Mom. So she called, and she got the lady on the phone. And, of course, she went through, well, what side's he laying on? And
just get an ambulance here, right?
I screamed in the phone. I said, hey, man, I think I'm dying. Get somebody here. And so anyway, I continued on, and she said, she called my son Mark, and Mark says, get him an aspirin, tell him he's having a heart attack. So she said, will you be all right out here? And I said, yeah. So she comes out, and I'm on my butt on the ground, and foam's coming out of my mouth.
Oh, my God.
All of a sudden, she calls, and this really is where it happened. And she calls, I guess, and the fire department is on its way, and they come up, and I don't remember anything until all of a sudden I arrived in a big room.
So you're in a hospital then?
No, I wasn't in the hospital. I was in a big room. And there were a whole bunch of people in there, and there was some big, gigantic angel standing next to me.
Oh.
I don't know if it was a man or a woman.
Okay.
But I'm a goose hunter, and any goose hunters that might be out there listening to this will know that when I reached up, and I said, what's going on? He said, just come on. He was talking. It was talking to me.
You had an after-death experience.
I did, man. It was great. But what happened was I grabbed him by the shoulder and I said, I can't go right now. I knew what it was.
Did you die in the ambulance?
Oh, yeah, several times. I should tell you, I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. But apparently, I went nuts in the ambulance at the time. I think I was in the ambulance at this time. And all of a sudden, the next thing I know is that I'm fighting for my life. And I'm looking at a wall, and it's got a big speaker. And it says, you got it. The guy's going, you got to go. And I said, I can't go. I got too much stuff coming. And I did have a lot of family problems. And all of a sudden, I felt this. I didn't hear it. I felt it in my soul. And it said, let him stay. And I could hear the angel. I felt the angel say, but he's got to go. He's got, no, let him stay. The next thing I knew, I was in a battle, and then bang, I woke up, and all my family was around me.
Now, when you woke up, where were you? In the hospital?
In the hospital, in the Issaquah Hospital. But
jeez, let me ask you a quick question, Ivan, because my clock's almost got me here. What happened to you? Was it a heart attack?
No. They have never figured it out.
Really?
And they had to stop the ambulance because they couldn't keep me alive. So they stopped the ambulance on the roadway, on the highway, stopped the traffic both ways, threw me into another gurney real fast, and it took me to the hospital in another ambulance. During that time, I became very combative, and I think I was fighting the angel, but maybe I was, I don't know what I was.
You probably were fighting the EMT and never even knew that, but my gosh, it's amazing they never figured out what happened to you when you even thought you were dying. Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Welcome to the program. Hey, Wayno.
Good morning, Sir George.
Hi there.
I've got the name of the man that was hit by the cab in New York City.
What's his name?
Rudolph Fentz, F-E-N-T-Z. Now, I hope you like this, or I hope you like me after this, okay? This is on Wikipedia. You can look this up on Wikipedia.
Okay.
Here it is. In the local character of I'm Scared, a 1952 science fiction short story by Jack Finney, which was later reported as an urban legend as if the events had really happened, the story tells of a 19th century looking young man possessing items of that period who was found confused in the middle of 1951 Times Square before being hit by a car, the cab, and killed, suggesting that he had perhaps involuntarily time traveled about a century forward. The story of Rudolph Fentz becomes one of the most significant urban legends of the 1970s, and thus is reported occasionally with the spread of the internet and, of course, on radio.
This show, probably. I love it. But the guy did die, right?
In the story, right.
In the story, I love it. I still think it's real. I still think it happened. There was another story where there was a picture of a guy in the 1800s, photograph in the 1800s, clearly holding up a cell phone to his ear. Now, that was weird. And they call him the time traveler. Annie in Alabama's with us. Hi, Annie. Welcome to the show.
George, I don't want this to hurt people. Have you seen this picture of Art Bell in the Las Vegas hospital?
Yes, that was when he was being treated a long time ago.
Well, he's got a whole lot of fluid. It looks like he's got 30 or 40 pounds of fluid. He looks like he's about 8 months pregnant.
That's, yes, I've seen that picture.
That looks like, I've had this in my family. It looks like congestive heart failure. When was that?
That was about 2 years ago, I think.
Well, what they do, I've been through this with my family and all. You go in and you're all swollen up like that with 30, 40 pounds of fluid. You look like you're in your third trimester.
Yeah.
And they give you a shot of furosemide. And as soon as it goes down, they try to rush you out the door because they know that in 24 hours you're going to be full of fluid again, and they want to get you out of there before it happens again because they don't want to contend with you. And I've seen it happen. These are throwaway people.
Now, he went in there that time, Annie, because he had COPD. He had the chronic pulmonary obstructive disease where he was having trouble breathing. That's why he went in there. And he was all, the picture you're talking about, he was all wired up with tubes and everything else. And folks, you know, again, don't speculate on the cause of death. If we get it, I'll put it on for you to be sure. But as of right now, we're told by the coroner 3 months later, almost 3 months to this day, because he passed on a Friday the 13th as well, that they have no toxicology results yet. But if we get them, I'll get them on for you.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Alex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.